Okay, hello everyone. My work laptop. I don't have any installed Gentoo on it because the employer doesn't allow it, but works for this one, seems. At least faster than usually with Linux and presentations. Anyway, about myself, I'm a Gentoo recruiting lead, council member, and Java team lead. Have been for some years now. And I study at the Aalto University in Finland, applied mathematics. Anyway, the agenda today is to take a look a little bit at a lower level than the last talk. It was a little bit of governance at maybe on a larger scale. And here, how a larger distribution does things about recruiting, retiring people, and getting rid of bad apples in the end. Are there people here who are involved in these activities in other distributions? Nope. Well, maybe we don't get discussion still from even if you're not involved. Okay, Gentoo, a from source build distribution in contrast to binaries that usually come with Ubuntu, Fedora, things like that, and can be customized whatever we want. The kernels doesn't have to be Linux, can be BSD journals and kernels and things like that. Okay, so why people contribute in the first place? As Max said in the last talk, it solves a problem for them. And of course, you can always pay people to work. As far as I know, not many people get paid to work on Gentoo to actual packaging and things like that. May get paid to be a system administrator, but not actually develop things. And it's fun for many people. If it's not fun, they usually quit, which we'll come to later. Okay, so how big is the organization, and why do I have something even to talk at the beginning with it? At the moment, we check our developer information in LDAP. It's 264 people. So you can't just let everyone do what they want. Too many for that. We saw in the last presentation, in a smaller scale, it works without no rules and things like that. But with hundreds of people, you need to start thinking about it on a larger scale and actually do some governance. Last year, it was 30 people who joined, and 35 the year before that. There's currently 4 people in the recruitment team, of which 3 are inactive. I'm the only active one. So most of those people go through me at some point. Not all of them write code. Like as seen before, we need people writing documentation, doing legal stuff, marketing, PR, things like that. For the beginning of this slide here, I have some statistical information to give some background of what kind of people contribute to open source. If you're doing human resources, you need to know about the resources you're managing. Can you see the numbers below? Are they too small? A bit small, okay. And I can just explain. On the left side, it's divided into blocks of 5 years by age. On the left, you have 15 to 20. And at the right, you have 55 or over. So most of the people are in the big block here, 89, between the age of 25 and 30. And the smaller blocks beside them are 20 to 25 and 30 to 35. So naturally this means probably the older people are not that into computers at large. And probably before the age of 15, you're probably more interested in computer games and things like that and actually open source development, and maybe hear about it later. It's interesting to see how it will develop in the coming years. I had this same slide last year for a different presentation, and it's shifting to the right, so we'll see if the trend continues. Okay, geographical distribution. How this information is built, every developer has the opportunity to record their coordinates into LDAP. And then there we have on our website Google Maps overlay, which places everyone on the map. And no, it's not a mistake. There's one guy in the middle of the ocean. He's actually over there laughing. Most of the people, as can be seen, are from the United States or Europe, which is quite natural, as you need to be quite fluent in English to be able to contribute. But if everyone has suggestions to how to get more people involved, there's probably a large community of open source contributors in like Brazil and Southern America in general, but how to get them involved in Gentoo and things like that, I have no idea. But probably because many people get... Was there a message for me? No? Okay. Many people get involved through their friends. If you have a large population in some location, like, for example, Germany, they pull in the people they know, and it starts to grow. But if you have no one, like in China, then it's kind of hard to them to get involved. And they have their own distributions, which they probably contribute instead of Gentoo. How do users become developers? Well, first you contribute in some way, initial contact, and then you have a contribution, probably Bugzilla, or you need to package something, and then you start thinking about how will I package this. You find some documentation, ask on IRC, then you contribute more, and when you have contributed enough, you start to get sucked in by someone, hopefully, and he starts to mentor you. And then we have an official process for bringing the people in. Why we have an official process is because when you have CVS access, it means you can commit packages right to the end user systems. So if you give freely everyone access, it just means that, I could commit RMFR root quite easily. So it's not nice. Probably users don't want that. Okay, but still, there's downsides. It's a very steep learning curve, and it's quite easy to get bored in the middle of a process like this, and then you never make it to the end. And of course, the end goal is to recruit as many people as you want into a process or a project or distribution, because is there anyone here who is involved in a process where there's too many people doing work? No. Are you involved in an open source project where there's too many coders or too many people writing documentation and that you don't need more resources? So we have a mentoring program. So we put people, our older developers are in charge of the new guys for a while. So it basically means if they screw up, you get to pick up the slack and share the blame. So, developer lifetime. As the process of the laborers needs a lot of labor, it means that people tend to stick around who finish it. They actually have motivation to contribute. And as the time goes by, because old people don't retire as fast as new people come in. In, for example, the Java project, average developer has been part of the team gets higher by the time. Of course, in the beginning, there's when you have only one or two people, when they leave, it causes quite a bit drops or increases. Okay, conclusions from my first part about recruiting. When it's a lot of work involved, and when you have an itch to scratch, you don't want to... Ideally, you would just be given access and you could be able to commit, but you need to strike a balance somewhere. And for the future, we are looking to make the process easier by migrating from CVS to JIT. Well, I hope it makes the process easier, at least. Okay. And anyone have any questions about recruiting people at this point? If you have any questions at any other point, feel free to interrupt me. Yeah. Yeah. Look.
You say that English is something you have to know to
Yeah, there's a point there. There's a distinction which I didn't make here. Aim of this recruitment process is for people who actually write code and have actual developer status, so they need some kind of CVS access or things like that. So you need to be able to communicate with others in the teams, so you need English skills. But if you, for a local community like marketing and things like that, you don't need to be a developer in that sense. In an open source community, users are encouraged and hopefully participate as well as much as possible. So less we need official developer status and things like that, the better. So basically, if they don't know English, they're probably not they're not able to read the technical documentation and actually write the technical stuff, or to translations if the source language is English. Yeah, did that answer your question? Okay. Well, that was one of goal to see if someone would show up here and maybe they would have some ideas. But yeah, it makes sense. But the problem is that in this sense, distributions are probably much more different in how they organize themselves than in terms of packaging. If you have an auto tools based build system, there's not that many ways to build it in the end. But yeah, it makes sense. But as you start to contribute in Debian or Gentoo and other distributions, you tend to forget the others exist at all. That's some if you're just involved in one.
Do you actually know how other distributions do their recruitment?
Yeah.
To a certain extent, there's not much we can actually do in terms of collaborating with recruitment. If anything, it's a place where we're going to be competing most. You know, you're always going to start off with users who want to learn more, who want to do more, and typically by the time you've got a developer who's going to be working on one of the projects, they've already made their mind up, I think.
And certain fanboyism is all of us involved.
Yeah.
So, any other questions on recruiting there? Do you need that? There's a mic coming your way.
I was wondering if you... Do you try to recruit some people on some certain expertise areas? I mean, maybe Gentoo Miss is an expert on a particular area, or you just recruit people that are interested in contributing code?
We try to recruit everyone who's contributing.
All right.
There's someone over there.
So how did you come up with that process?
Well, I inherited from the people who were in the project before me. So I don't know who how it was initially conceived. Does anyone of the Gentoo developers here know? No one's been around enough. I know the process has been pretty much the same since like 05. And Gentoo, we had 10-year birthday, so it was conceived somewhere in the beginning of last decade. But that's all I know. Probably at the point when you achieve the critical mass of developers and you need to start enforcing some kind of quality assurance. And then you start thinking about the process. The process involves filling a couple of quizzes, technical quizzes. So it's a wrap around those, checking them and having people submit them. Okay. There's any other questions before we move to the actual more interesting part for which can be shared between distribution, which is getting rid of people. Yeah. We try if they're to see if they are willing to stick around and are of a good enough technical level. But if you contribute to documentation, usually it's quite easy to check.
Does that mean that sometimes you have to make up jobs? Because I work on the GnuSense distribution. Sometimes we get people saying, yes, I'm a C developer, I want to contribute. Yes, well, we don't have any work for you.
Well, yeah, we do get a lot of mails from people like, I've written Java in the university, I want to contribute. Then we just reply back and never hear from them. Mm-hmm. But my point was, we try to recruit everyone who has contributed. Mm-hmm. Those people who say they know C or Java and whatever, they haven't contributed yet and probably won't. Mm-hmm. There's a quite high bar from actually mailing once and then actually writing a patch. Anything else?
Do you relate with other teams? For example, with a tool team or the documentation team or something? I mean, do you have any needs from other teams in Gentoo?
Well, the other teams are the guys who actually start the mentoring process. So the mentors come from the teams themselves. And I'm just an I'm just a bureaucrat looking over the process. So they have someone to actually talk with and who teaches them stuff, who comes from like KDE or GNOME or toolchain or things like that. Okay. So, why people stop contributing? Well, each has been scratched, so they don't have anything to contribute anymore. It's not fun anymore. There's too many trolls around. And their engagements in life. For example, getting a child. So, how do people stop contributing? Well, the most popular thing I've seen is just disappearing. And some people are good enough to announce that they're leaving and take care that their packages are moved to someone else. And of course, with a couple hundred people, you have people who need to be removed from the community because they're just not able to get along. Yeah.
How many people have you ever actually had to kick out from Gentoo?
Maybe a little bit under 10, but that's an estimate. I don't know about the earlier days, but it's been a while since the last epic happening of things like this. A little bit under 10. That's my guess. A little bit under 10. Active people is currently 265. But since in the decade that the project's been running, it's probably been like 1,000 people involved in total. That's just a guess, but. Like 30 people came out last year, and so it didn't grow that much from the year before. So about the same number went out during the same time. And from that, George, can you say about 100 people are inactive? But those are not the people. Yeah. a little bit like the core people who do the bulk of the work, like 100 is my estimate. But bad apples, like maybe 10. But there's this one familiar, one well-known case. Not going to sell names now. But if you followed any mailing lists or things like that, you probably know what I'm talking about. So, what do some? We have this developer away system where you can say that you're not around and can tell that where are you and when you're coming back. There's some of my pickups from the list. So someone from 2007 has said taking a break for a while, no idea when I'll be back. Probably not coming back. This is so that our retirement team needs more people. And if you find someone interested, feel free to contact me. But some quite common to see messages like this. They're going somewhere and doing things. And then when it's done, they realize that they have better things to do. And then it just stays there for a while. So we do have a process. As we do have a process coming in, we have a process going out. We require a couple of commits in the last 2 months to stay active. Debian have a policy these days. I think you used to have that everyone stayed in.
For a very long time, we didn't actually have the formal process. We now have a couple of systems in place to check for mailing list posts or to see if people are committing, if people are uploading packages. If we don't see any activity, we don't kick people out.
Yeah, there's Mike coming your way.
Yeah, they get reminder emails, that kind of thing. It's a fairly obvious process.
But yeah, basically, for Debian, you also have a similar policy that you need to contribute to stay active.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how we do it, we send them emails to which they reply, yes, I'm planning to get active again. Then they may commit something, and after a couple of months, the same thing happens again, and then you might be... We don't actively, if someone is interested in that, it's not a goal by itself to get rid of people, but why we do it, if there's a package or a Bugzilla bug, which is Bugzilla, assigned to people, it's better to say that say up front that it's not maintained, so the user knows that it's not maintained, instead of there's someone's name from and the bug stays open for a couple of years. And for security reasons, having everyone who has access is a possible security issue. So, getting rid of bad apples. Bad apples can ruin your day and ruin the atmosphere. Because, as I started, it's supposed to be fun. And if it's not fun, then you don't get anything done. You just get sucked into endless mailing list discussions and don't write code. People are very likely to just leave the project instead of and find a place somewhere else where they can do the work in a more constructive environment. So we have a team dedicated to handle these issues. And you can open a Bugzilla bug, a complaint about someone, and our goal is, of course, that the people are able to resolve the issues between themselves, but do all people get along? No. So in the end, you need some intervention.
So how do you find the people to work on that team?
How do you find them? Well, we don't actively find them, but they have joined the team at some point. George, do you remember how many there are? So there's 3 to 5 people on the team, so it gets okay on the recording there. But the lead is a woman, so maybe that helps. Oh, you dropped something. So, how? It's hard. and you don't want to make mistakes. It can ruin someone's mood and life for a while, because it's kind of a hard hit when you get kicked out for bad behavior. And usually those people who get kicked out don't acknowledge they have a problem. And if they acknowledge they had a problem, they will seek help. And the problem is, once you kick someone out, but if your policy is that you're having an open community, you can't really stop them from still being part of the community at large. For example, mailing lists. We have people who have been kicked out some years ago still around, and there's always a regular discussion about if they should be allowed to post at all to mailing lists or not.
Yeah, on that front, we have a few filters in place on the mailing lists, so people who are known trolls and stuff, and also some of the people who've been dropped from the project, can no longer post. Of course, it's trivial if they really want to for them to forge their email address or something, but thankfully most of them don't do that. And we had a discussion about exactly this from various projects a couple of years ago. One thing was suggested at the meeting was, if you have a problem with people spamming your mailing lists and trolling, a way of getting around that is to have a clever filter that won't send the mail out to everybody else, but will put it in the archives. So if they go looking for their own mail, they believe it's gone to everybody, it's in the discussion, but it can't carry on a flame war.
But don't they ever wonder why they don't get any replies?
Apparently it works for the projects involved. I think it sounds like a cute idea to try.
The problem that comes up with that, a lot of people don't like moderation at all. There's always a discussion about people who want to have lists moderated and people who want them to have open access. And of course, when you have moderators, there's a problem if they're biased or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you were able to still get the in that some things are moderated, or was it then decision by a project leader or some consensus? Or
apparently for the project in question, I can't even remember who it was that suggested it. It was agreed by consensus that it was a reasonable thing to do, and they had a committee or project leader or whatever would make the decision as to who would be involved. It's not something we've tried, but it might be useful.
Do you have a process for kicking misbehaving people out?
Yes, we do. We have a set of guidelines for people. For example, they can have their access revoked if they abuse usage of various project machines. Say, if we found, and I'm not saying we have, if we found someone who was doing Where's Trading from their account on a Debian server, then obviously we would take a dim view of that and we'd kick them out. Otherwise, people have to go through, there is a defined procedure where if enough other developers complain officially to the people who are in charge of account management, then a vote is started. That kicks off a discussion, there is scope for a vote, and depending on the results of that, the person will have their account removed. It's only ever been invoked a very small number of times. It's why I asked earlier how many people you'd kicked out. I think we've had, is it 4 or 5 maybe in the history of the project? There's places where we've actually had to remove somebody. It's obviously it's a major step.
Let's see if I have a... Yeah. Of course... Before actually kicking someone out, we do try to use lesser means, giving people notices and suspensions. And we have an appeal process. So the council, which is the overall, the highest ruling body of the community, you're able to appeal there. And of course, those are technical people, well elected for technical skills. So it's not like you would be getting similar treatment like a court, but you get judgment by peers, mainly. I assume it works pretty much the same.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, we go through whatever seems reasonable to the people who are in charge of accounts. There is always the possibility of going to a general resolution to overrule a decision like that, and that's where we take a vote out to all of the developers. We try and resolve disputes first in any way we can. That's where the project leader normally comes in. If two developers really can't get on, or if it's a technical disagreement, we've got the tech committee. If it goes any further than that, yeah, we go through this very similar process to you.
One thing to discuss is infrastructure people can revoke access, of course, if they want to. But do you have infrastructure people in charge, or is it separate? Like you said, the people in charge of the machines can revoke the access, or?
Well, we've got the Debian sysadmin team who are actually responsible for creating and removing accounts. They do have the power to disable an account immediately without warning if they think there's a security risk. For anything else, they just get told what to do in terms of adding new logins or removing old ones. I'm curious, actually, is there anybody from any of the other projects or distributions in the room here, or are we just having a discussion? You know, I'm curious if how anybody else does it. Does anybody have any input?
All the Fedora guys went for lunch, sure.
Yeah, looks like.
Well, at least there's discussion between two projects. But of course, I'm guessing that like Ubuntu and Fedora, where you have a corporate entity and they have job contracts for the core people, there's legal issues involved too for getting them out. So it's a bit different from a purely volunteer driven project like Debian or Gentoo. See if I have it. Anyway, there's 7 minutes left. I was reserving for a discussion about course digital stuff more, if there was people here, but there's not. But I guess we can, if we have more ideas, we can just keep discussing. How do you do it? Bad apples. Anyone here who have ideas about what do you think is the best idea to get people behaving better or out? Any opinions? Yeah, we probably should move the mic if you want to record.
A problem I have, and I know a few others have, is I have some very small packages which I've written for my own use and are happy to share up on SourceForge. And I'm really not too sure the process of getting it into any packet, any distribution. I've got this wonderful package called Sushi. How do I get it into Gentoo? Or how do I get people at Gentoo to look at it, see if it's worth anything or not? That's the question.
I have a talk about it in like 2 hours, so come by then. Any other questions or suggestions? If not, we can have a break of like, well, that's 7 minutes. So, oh, there's one.
So I like the idea of voting, as in the entire community voting for a certain decision to be made, because if the community is made or centered around those people who contribute their time, then maybe it's the best thing to also let that community decide what they want by means of a majority vote somehow. So instead of having like a few people that actually are around the table and decide whether or not this is okay, maybe it should escalate in the end to the entire community to decide.
So I might not have been quite 100% clear. I mean, the way we do it is we have the trusted people who are delegated to be in charge of account maintenance. And then if you really need to go, if there is a lot of controversy about it, then we can start a vote to overrule that decision. We generally try to avoid voting on everything. It slows us down. Obviously, it's an important one if people are being kicked out. It's only ever... if we ever get to the stage where an account manager will consider deleting an account, there's already clearly there's a lot of opinion behind that, and there's a lot of evidence for it. So we tend to assume that if they've made that decision, it's correct, and the only then overruling is where the vote comes in.
And the problem with votes is that the opinions of individuals can be based on wrong, purely wrong information. It's just a personal perception.
But you know from experience that is also with those few people that actually decide about that, right?
Yeah.
Favor of them and half of the community against them. And when you get to that stage, if you go by a majority vote, you're going in a very wrong way, because it's going to be very hard in the end to get the community working again, and it's going to create a rift. And you know we had it in the past.
Well, I agree to that, actually. It is also that, it's not like you are paid. So if many people in your community actually dislike or something else like that, or just have the opinion, even though it's not right, then it won't work. So that's actually why I think it's interesting to... Of course, you shouldn't vote for everything. Yeah, that's obvious. But for some cases, and we only had very few, maybe it would be interesting to at least consult developer base to at least get a hard yes or no or something, and then after that see if you maybe want to deviate from that.
I can tell you that in the cases we had in the past, most of the community had gone to the developer relations complaining about them, so it wasn't just the team deciding by itself. The team got to decide because developers went there complaining about that person, and usually you get quite a few people. And one of the issues, as you know, is that you sometimes get to a point that most of the people that are affected and that are upset by it simply stop caring. And so you can't rely on them telling you, we don't like this, we don't like this this person, we can't work with them. They'll stop caring, and in some cases they'll even go away.
Yeah, it's always a toss-up. You don't want to lose your valuable 10 valuable contributors because of one bad egg, no matter how good they are. I mean, for us, again, we do our level best to take away just personal opinion, like or dislike. So when we come up with this procedure where I think we need 15 Debian developers to nominate and say, this person is disruptive and we'd be better off without them, the process then, the next part of the process, this is all on the Debian website if you want to have a look. The next part of the process is the person is notified, the rest of the project is notified that the process is going on. We then ask for evidence from both sides before anyone makes a decision for or against. But specifically, it's got to be evidence more than just, oh my God, I hate this person, I can't possibly work with them. You've actually got to point to chapter and verse, be it mailing list postings, be it evidence of just of bad behaviour somewhere, so we can actually try and make a reasonable, rational decision.
Just some question. When you say you vote, it's not the channel developer community, right? It's the council that votes.
We don't do a vote at this stage. It's down to the core account managers, the Debian account managers to make this decision. If we go to a vote, then it goes out to GR, which is general resolution for all the developers, because at that point they're overruling the decision of the delegate, and that's a defined process.
Yeah, we're running out of time, so thanks everyone.
Yeah. Thank you.